There are shows with psychics.
And there are shows with doctors.
But there's no show like The Psychic and the Doc.
Your practical paranormal power unleashed.
This show synthesizes the talents of world-class medium Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, psychic explorer,
and street-smart spiritualist, behavioral psychologist, Dr. Pat Basile. All subjects are on the table, and no topic is taboo. Inspiration, insight,
action, and fun, as Mark Anthony connects callers with loved ones in spirit.
In tandem with Dr. Pat's fresh, no-nonsense, street-smart, intuitive insights. And she is hilarious.
Extraordinary problems
require extraordinary solutions, which may come from this side
or the other side. This is The Psychic
and the Doc,
and it starts now.
Welcome, everybody, to The Psychic and the Doc. I'm Mark Anthony. My amazing co-host, Dr. Pat Basile, will be back next week for a special episode called Thank Your Lucky Charms, where we'll be exploring whether good fortune, is it luck, manifestation, or both. But this week, we have a very special guest, my friend and colleague, Mike Ricksecker. Mike is a world-renowned paranormal investigator. You've probably seen him all over television. I mean, he's been on Animal Planet's The Haunted, The Travel Channel's Alaska Triangle, and the Bio Channel's My Ghost Story and Mysteries of Mankind. Mike is a science-based paranormal investigator. And I've had the honor of being on his show a number of times. And so it's really great being able to repay the favor. Mike is also the author of the spiritual supernatural bestseller, A Walk in the Shadows. And that's what we're doing tonight. We are going to take a walk in the shadows. And if you would like to share your paranormal, your supernatural experience, and have Mike's take on it, call into the show at 1-800-930-2819. Mike, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Mark. It's fantastic to be on your show. We just had you on ours the other day and had, again, an amazing time. So thank you very much. Always appreciated, my friend.
Yeah, it was fun. We were talking about the gates of hell and the Loch Ness Monster. And so now we're talking about a walk in the shadows. But before we get into that, Mike, you're also known as a ghostorian. Now, that's a word I've never heard before. Can you tell us what is a ghostorian?
Yeah, ghostorian is kind of a term that I coined, I guess. And you know, basically what it is, you know, think of ghost, historian, mashed together. You know, I basically define it as a person who researches a ghost in the place in which it haunts. And I wanted to come up with a term because I'm not a historian by degree. I don't have a history degree. My degree is in computers. So I didn't want to step on anybody's toes, and so this is the term that that I came up with to kind of describe what it is I do in the paranormal field.
So that ties into the approach that you have is before you go on an investigation, you really do your homework because you know I've read your book and I've also been privy to watching a lot of the work that you do, and you take a more analytical and scientific approach, don't you?
Well, I try to, you know, and when it comes to the history, I do like to know as much as I can about the location and the people that may have lived there or worked there, depending on exactly what the whole location is, whether it's a home or, you know, maybe it's some sort of historic venue or what have you. So I do want to know as much as I can before going in, because those are going to be typically the spirits that we're going to be interacting with. And so I will use that information to come in knowing something about those people, because it makes for a conversation starter. You know, we're trying to communicate with somebody on the other side, somebody in the afterlife. So it would help to know something about them to get the conversation started. But I do try to use other tools as well, you know, different meters and devices, electronic equipment to try to capture some of that activity to validate, you know, exactly what it is we are actually encountering, when we're having an interaction with spirit, are we able to get some sort of electromagnetic reading out of that so that, you know, if we're not getting, say, an EVP, but we're still getting the electromagnetic fluctuation, maybe that's somebody that's trying to communicate. You know, so it gives us some sort of clue as to, you know, whether or not these things are actually working.
You know, a lot of our audience may not be familiar with some of the equipment that you use. And, you know, you and I talk the same language about electromagnetic activity because in my work as a medium, I'm always talking and explaining how spirits are pure electromagnetic energy. And what they're doing is they're emitting impulses that go into our brain, and our brain's electromagnetic field interfaces with it. And that's how we're able to communicate. But for an objective observer like yourself, you mentioned a couple different types of equipment. Could you, you know, just briefly explain what some of the most, what's the equipment that you use? What is it? What does it do? What are you looking for?
Sure. Well, first of all, I do always say that the best tool that we can bring with us to a paranormal investigation is our own bodies. Our own bodies and our own senses are our best tools going in. That said, when it comes to, you know, some of the actual, you know, man-made equipment, first and foremost, flashlight for safety. Then I, of course, like my cameras, have a number of different video cameras and also cameras for taking photographs. I like to use my digital audio recorder to try to capture electronic voice phenomena, which would be spirit voices. I think a very underrated tool is a notepad and a pencil, something to jot notes while we're investigating. That's kind of fallen by the wayside in recent years, but it really comes in handy when we're trying to, you know, go back over our evidence for the investigation if you have some notes that you took. As far as capturing electromagnetic fields, you know, I have a couple of different devices for that. One is a K2 meter,
right?
You know, basically capture some nearby electromagnetic fields. I have another device called a millimeter. Kind of does the same thing, gives you a digital readout, but also will take temperature readings, which is that can come in handy sometimes. You get those hot and cold spots.
Yeah,
you're interacting.
Yeah, let me interrupt right here. In a lot of movies and in the investigations I've been on, hot and cold spots. Can you explain what they are and what does it mean when you hit a hot spot, and what does it mean when you hit a cold spot?
Yeah, these are kind of some interesting moments when this happens. You know, something has happened, with the energy in that area to either, you know, charge it. You get the the atoms in that area that, you know, maybe start vibrating a lot more, and that's when we start getting, you know, some of those hot spots. Those atoms really get charged, and it's like, oh, you know, something's warm over here. And then there are other times in which we kind of speculate that the entity or the spirit is taking that energy from the air, basically taking those electrons, those atoms, and taking that from the air in order to do something, and maybe manifest or try to communicate. But it needs energy to do that, and so, you know, we kind of speculate that, well, it's taking that from the air, and that's why we're feeling that cold spot.
That's really interesting. So yeah, the hot indicates one type of activity and the cold another. Yeah, because I've seen the K2 meters. Those are K2 meters. That's pretty basic equipment.
It's basic, yeah.
It's basic. Now, the EVP, electronic voice phenomenon. Okay, you got to tell us about that. I'm sure you got some interesting stories.
Oh, I certainly do. Yeah. I've had a number of EVPs over the years, and you know what we're doing with that, with the digital audio recorder, is, you know, we're trying to listen for responses that we couldn't hear with our own ears while we were performing an investigation. So, you know, we'll call out questions to, you know, basically to the air, you know, because usually we can't see anything, but to try to communicate with something that might be there. And we'll listen back later and see if we actually capture something. Now, I will say that a reel-to-reel tape will actually work better than a digital audio recorder because you have the tape is electrically charged. It's magnetic tape, so it has more of a propensity to actually actually capture that. The problem is that it's really cumbersome to carry a reel-to-reel tape with you, and then to actually export it onto a computer, you need additional equipment. So it's just easier to use a little digital audio recorder these days. But yeah, I couldn't even tell you the number of EVPs that I've captured over the years. But there's been some really fascinating experiences with some of these. Where just for example, walking into one home, it was a residential case, and we're just setting up, getting things ready, and we're kind of talking amongst ourselves, our game plan for the evening of investigating this home. And I had already started my audio recorder, and in between there, while we're setting up, while we're discussing our strategy, you hear this whisper, "We shouldn't talk. We shouldn't talk." So it's like the spirits in the home are conspiring to not communicate with us that evening. And sure enough, it was a pretty quiet evening.
Do they ever communicate to you directly, as opposed to hearing like things that they're some message directed specifically at you?
Sometimes we'll get a disembodied voice. I'll also say this: I am a bit sensitive. It's never anything that I actually ever admit to. I would never be someone to sit here and say that I'm psychic. But people tell me that I have more going on than I give myself credit for. But I could be sitting there sometimes. I could be walking into a room and know, okay, somebody's in here. Every once in a great while, I could be sitting there, we're doing a session, and something will kind of just come into my head. We'll ask a question, and boom, something ends up in my mind to answer the question. I know it wasn't from me.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, it makes a lot of sense. And see, we all have the same basic physiological equipment. Some people are just better at spirit communication than others. And because of the work that you do, you're more open, you're more predisposed to it. So yeah, don't negate those experiences. I mean, I know that you don't, but you're a clinical objective observer, and then all of a sudden you start having these mystical spiritual experiences, and it can be a little bit like, now that's interesting. I remember the first time I did remote viewing, and I was like, wow, that was different. But the more you work at it, you get used to it. But the thing is, you made a very important point. You said the most important piece of equipment that we bring is our own bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You have, your five senses plus that sixth sense that sometimes you can, tap into, especially you, Mark.
I love going on paranormal investigations. We're going to a break now, but we do have a caller. And so if you want to share your paranormal supernatural experience and get Mike Ricksecker, world-renowned paranormal investigator's analysis of it, please call in 1-800-930-2819. And we'll be right back after this message.
Get empowered on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Juggling life's relentless demands can leave us unbalanced and restless. Do you feel stuck in the overwhelm? Diane McClay is a personal empowerment coach, author, and compassionate storyteller on a mission to boost you into balance and help you move forward with passion and purpose. Get unstuck with Diane on The Diane McClay Show every second and fourth Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Diane, visit DianeMcClay.com.
Angels are among us, and they are communicating with us all the time. Most of the time, we are so distracted that we don't recognize the signs or even know that the angels are just waiting for us to ask for help. If you're looking for a clear channel to connect you to the angels, look no further. Chris Gibbs is an angel intuitive and does angelic readings and consultations. The angels speak to her quickly, giving her a clear and distinct narrative and dialogue that is direct and on point. Chris cares about her clients, and it shows through her work. She has been a teacher of metaphysics for over 30 years. She is truly gifted. Contact Chris to help you address your soul purpose or whatever is important to you right now. You can reach Chris at 719-362-6935, by email at greatteach9@gmail.com, or you can go to her website, angelreadingsbychris.com. That's angelreadingsbychris, K-R-I-S.com. You will not regret the guidance you were given.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
What we've been taught and told is not all there is. Life is all about energy, and the energy you feel is real. Tune into the Energy Paradigm each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com with Dr. Vic. The Energy Paradigm is an eye-opening, mind-shifting, transformative, and earth-shattering way to live, work, and do business that will enable you to unlock your magic every day. Visit TheEnergyParadigm.com.
Hey everybody, I'm Mark Anthony, co-host of The Psychic and the Doc, and my co-host, Dr. Pat Basile, will be back next week for a special episode, Thank Your Lucky Charms, and we're investigating ancient Celt wisdom and the phenomenon known as good fortune, good luck. But tonight, we're talking to Mike Ricksecker, a world-renowned paranormal investigator. And Mike, I understand we've got a caller who wants to share a paranormal story with you. So let's go to the phone lines.
All right. First up, we've got Jackie from California. Jackie, you're on with Mark and Mike.
Hey, Jackie, can you are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you guys?
Hey, Jackie, how you doing? We're getting a bit of feedback, so if you have your computer speakers on in the background, please turn them off. Go ahead and tell us about your paranormal story.
Let me just turn off my iPad really quick.
Okay.
Yeah,
For all the other callers, make sure you don't have your speakers on the radio or computer or iPad on in the background, because what happens is your phone picks up the speaker and it gives us a distortion, and that's an electromagnetic field. That's what Mike and I are talking about, me as a medium and he as an investigator. So, Jackie, I understand that you have an interesting story about your otherworldly encounter.
Yes, and thank you for having me on the show, Mark and Mike. It's a pleasure talking to you guys.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Tell us about what happened.
Okay, so it happened 9 years ago. I went on a tour, a ghost tour, in San Diego at the Whaley's house. Now, the Whaley's house is supposed to be the most haunted house, haunted location in Old Town San Diego. There's a lot of ghostly activity. Many people have seen shadows. So I went with my friend one night, and it was close to Halloween time. We actually went 2 weeks before Halloween, and we went on a private paranormal investigation tour where it was just my friend, me, and the tour guide. So with this ghost tour, they turn off all the lights, but they have the lamp lights on, and then the ghost tour guide walks with the flashlight. So we're walking around the house, and the house is very creepy and scary, because for me, I could sense the slightest thing, because I'm an empath, so I easily sense things. And when we went to different rooms, I can feel ghosts and spirits nearby. But to make a long story short, at the end of our tour, which we only had 45 minutes left, we were all in this room together, and the lights were dim and everything. And all of a sudden, the guy that was doing the tour, he says that he sees a shadow in the hallway. And he told us to look over towards the hallway, the entrance of the door of where the house is, and close to where the stairs is.
Okay, so what happened?
So I saw the shadow.
Okay, so I saw the shadow.
Right. And then I started describing what I was feeling and what I was clairvoyant seeing. And the tour guide says, "You are right. That's how he died. And I believe it was Yankee Jim." And because he died right at that spot, he was actually hanged over where the stairs were. And I believe his shadow was, we both believe his shadow was there. But I saw it was just standing tall as a, very tall, didn't move, and the ghost tour guide recognized that shadow right away.
All right, hold on, Jackie. Okay, so you saw an image of a shadow, and Mike, your documentary, The Shadow Dimension, and your book, A Walk in the Shadows. This is the perfect story for that. Can you tell Jackie what your analysis of this phenomenon was?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I mean, the Whaley House, a wonderfully haunted location. I've known somebody that's worked there, a very good friend of mine. My girlfriend, Nicole, has been trying to get me there for a long time. She's been there many times. So it's supposed to be a fantastic location. I've always wanted to get there. So I'm happy you got a chance to go. Yankee Jim's definitely supposed to be one of the spirits there, one of the many spirits that are roaming the grounds there. And a lot of times these shadows that we encounter are, they're really just a human spirit that can't fully manifest as an apparition. So we only see them as a shadow. And this is, a perfect example of that. There's a lot of different variations of shadow entities. And Mark, I know that we're going to get into those.
Yes.
I always find it discouraging when people say, "Oh, there's a shadow, it must be demonic or something like that." But no, most times it's just a human. And this is a great example of that.
Well, Jackie, thank you for calling in and sharing that. We really appreciate it. So Mike, I want to talk about your book, but first, you just completed work on a documentary, The Shadow Dimension. What's that about?
Yeah, absolutely. The Shadow Dimension, it's in the middle of post-production right now. You can find out more information about that, shadowdimension.com, which is where we have a brand new trailer up there for it. So you can watch the 2-minute trailer. And what I've done with this, now I had some grandiose plans for it last year, but COVID kind of limited what we could actually do. But but the idea was to go to locations that have known shadow phenomena and research it and find out if we can find some different things in common between the locations to be able to try to determine, what is it that draws these shadows here? Why do they manifest at these particular locations? And can we actually get some real concrete interactions with these things to try to determine once and for all exactly what they are? Because I believe what a kind of quote-unquote true shadow person is an interdimensional being. Right. And I also believe that many of them will manifest close to locations that have known vortex energy, that energy that wells up from the Earth's magnetic core and spawns off portals and all kinds of other activities. So I went to a couple of those locations at the end of last year, we investigated, and I interviewed people like you, Mark, to get some expert analysis, which was fantastic. And it's really coming together. So it should be out this spring.
Yeah, thank you for including me in that. I know we had the segment that I'm in, we talked about interdimensional communication, interdimensional beings. Now, let's talk about your book, A Walk in the Shadows. Now, clearly, this is also about the shadow people, but tell us about the book. Why did you decide to write A Walk in the Shadows?
Yeah, A Walk in the Shadows. This is it's something that's been coming together for some years now. I've been involved some way, shape, or form with the paranormal for about 30 years. Some of my very early childhood experiences with paranormal activity happened to be with shadow entities. And so,
Hold on. I'm not letting you off the hook on that one. I got to hear this. Okay, so one of your earliest experiences, you were a child. All right, you got to tell us about this one.
Yeah, there are two very significant ones. So the first one, I was about 8 years old, woke up in the middle of the night, and there standing in the corner of my room was this tall, dark shadow figure. So, of course, I had no idea, you called it a, shadow person or anything like that. I just thought there was an intruder in my room, and it was about to kill me, because that's what you think at 8 years old. So I was very frightened, of course, trying to scream. My mouth opens. Nothing comes out. And this thing did something very strange and unusual, especially with all the shadow stories that I've collected over the years. This one is quite different. It approached my bed, leaned over. I'm staring up into this face that has nothing. There's no eyes, no nose, no mouth, nothing. It's all black. It actually grabbed me by the wrists, crossed my arms across my body, and then it ran off down the hall. By this time, I found my voice, found my legs, ran off to my parents' bedroom screaming. They calmed me down, consoled me, tried to tell me that I had just had a bad dream, but I'd been awake for this entire thing. So it's really one of my most significant paranormal experiences ever.
Yeah, I would guess. That's pretty intense.
That was the first one. As a child, I've had all kinds of, as an adult, being on paranormal investigations. The second one was also pretty interesting. I was 13 at this time. We were just moving from our house in Massachusetts to a new house in Ohio. And I'm unpacking boxes, putting things away. And I kept seeing this figure standing in my doorway. And I'd turn, look, and it would take off. And so I'd go back to what I was doing, and I'd see it standing there in the corner again, and I'd turn, look, and it would take off. So this happened for a couple of days, and finally I just got fed up, and I asked my mom about it. And I guess she thought I was a little bit more mature at that point, and she told me that she had also seen this thing around the house. But she did it in such a way that was not alarming. It was just kind of very nonchalant, matter of fact, yeah, I've seen it. So just getting that affirmation was great, and the fact that she wasn't alarmed was even better. So I got playful with this thing because it was like, okay, there's nothing to worry about here. And so I'd be doing something in my room. I'd see it standing in the doorway, and I'd say, "Hi, Tom." I called him Tom, like Peeping Tom. He'd take off. And so that went on for about 3 or 4 months, and then the activity just kind of subsided and went away.
So aside from when you were 8 years old, it appears that you pretty much after that lost your fear of encountering the shadow people.
Yeah, I go out on these paranormal investigations seeking answers. I'm very curious. So, when I see something happening, I'm usually going after it, or I'm trying to interact with it and trying to learn more. I do kind of get the question, okay, what was your most frightening experience on investigations? I haven't really had one on an investigation because I'm in that mode, let's go discover. So the times that I have had something disconcerting, of course, I was frightened with that one when I was 8, but when I've had something disconcerting or concerning, it's usually been when I'm caught off guard, not investigating, situations that have nothing to do with, being out on an investigation or researching.
Oh, Mike, before we go any further, how do people get hold of you and what's your website, and can they purchase your book, A Walk in the Shadows, through your website?
Yeah, you can get it through the website, MikeRicksecker.com. All my information is there. It gives you links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those places to be able to get it. It's also on audiobook. I did just release the second edition here back in January. So for those that already have the first edition, the second edition has a lot more information. I've updated some things in it as well.
Yeah, Mike's book, A Walk in the Shadows, I highly recommend it. It's been extremely well received by those of us in the paranormal community who are science-based. So this isn't just boogie-woogie man. I mean, this is, if you're going to study paranormal phenomenon, this is the book to read. And Mike, one thing that we've discussed on a number of occasions is the various forms that the shadow people appear in. So they don't always appear in human form, do they?
No. I mean, that's kind of the most common is, what we call a humanoid figure, or then there's the hat-wearing ones, which are kind of like a humanoid figure, but they're wearing a hat and sometimes some additional clothing. So it could be like a fedora with a trench coat or a top cap with a cape and something like that. But they also come in, mists and wisps. There are hooded figures. There's what we call the crawler. So they do take a lot of different shapes and forms, and I've seen a lot of different varieties of them.
The crawlers, now those are really interesting characters. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, these are some of the more nefarious type of shadow entities, and they look like kind of like they sound. They're crawling around on all fours. They're very fast. They're very quick. You kind of imagine any of those demonic horror films where somebody is getting down on all forms, you hear the bones cracking and all that stuff, and all of a sudden they're scurrying across the floor. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like, but you don't get the bones cracking and it doesn't look human. Right. It's a shadow. And you kind of see this flurry of arms and legs. I have experienced this one time. That was during a paranormal investigation at an abandoned church out in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma. It was called Black Bear Church. And we were down in the basement area, and all of a sudden, we see this shadow slip through one of the broken windows, and it starts circling us. And there were legends of this crawler being out there. We'd heard the stories and what have you. And suddenly we see this thing because there's kind of the flurry of the arms and legs along the walls, the ceiling. At some point, it hit the floor because it knocked the bottle across the floor, hit a metal railing. So it's doing all this stuff. The medium that was with us at the time suggested, okay, let's sing some hymns, let's say some prayers, let's try to lighten the atmosphere, put a more positive energy in the atmosphere to try to push this thing away from us. And we did, and it actually went back out the window again. So, that was kind of a crazy 5 minutes right there.
That's amazing. And, you know, when you're talking about there's different forms, so some appear in the form of animals. The other night when I was on your show, which is The Edge of the Rabbit Hole, and Mike, you have another show too, don't you?
Yeah, Beyond the Shadows, which I usually do on Wednesday nights, but tonight we're doing it tonight right after this show. So.
Okay. It's funny because, we're right before President Biden's first nationwide address. And this is an auspicious day because a year ago today is when the COVID pandemic officially started, and today the COVID Relief Act was signed. So there's got to be something about March 11th that's auspicious. And people tend to generalize spiritual entities. They just sort of lump them all into one category. And when you're talking about the crawlers and then you're talking about shadow people, can you briefly explain like the different types of shadow entities or entities that appear in a shadowy form?
How long do we have on this show?
See, so I think that kind of answers my question.
Because you're right. We do tend to generalize, and a lot of people will, ask me just, okay, so what's a shadow person? And it's like, well, there are a lot of different types and varieties. There's even the old hag, which we get into sleep paralysis and those types of conversations with. There are shadow pets as well and shadow animals. So, you can even look at, okay, so we talked before that some of these are, human spirits.
Right.
That's one type. I believe some of them are interdimensional beings. They've traveled here from some other plane of existence. I've had interactions with those as well. Some could be extraterrestrials or time travelers. You know, there's a lot of different things that they could actually be.
Wow. So extraterrestrial beings appearing in the form of shadow people, would this be like an indication that they're not using some type of vessel? And the reason that I say this is in my research, the official position of you know, the UFOs, the U.S. military's UFO project, is that UAP, unidentified aerial phenomenon, which we used to call UFOs and flying saucers. It's not a tin can flying through space, but rather it's a form of technology which is able to jump from one location to another. I mean, technically a quantum leap, if you will. So how does that tie into your understanding of some of the shadow people actually being extraterrestrial beings, which, you know, people from other planets, other solar systems?
Yeah, well, there's a couple different things to consider here. I mean, one, they could be, they've learned how to, you know, harness, you know, the space-time continuum and have traveled here, you know, what we would usually call interdimensionally or through a wormhole or something like that. Then when they actually appear here on this side, they may not, you know, fully manifest, and all we see is the figure of them. But if you want to, you know, talk about, you know, possible types of technology, you know, if it's not necessarily craft, but something else that has brought them here, they could be utilizing some sort of cloaking device, because usually if they're going to, a lot of these shadow entities that, you know, we see are just standing there, they're watching and observing. We hear a lot of extraterrestrial encounters in which they're watching and observing. I believe what happens sometimes is some of these are utilizing some sort of cloaking device, but don't fully understand yet how our physiology works. And so while they think that what they're wearing or what they're using is cloaking them to our eyes, and maybe they're not quite correct about that, and we're actually able to see a part of them. It comes off as a shadow, or some people talk about seeing like a shimmer type of a person. And so, you know, maybe that's the actual ET.
You know, I have a feeling that if Dr. Pat were here tonight, she would ask, do you feel as a paranormal investigator that people in your field, do you feel that you are psychologically impacted by the work that you do?
Wow. that's an interesting question. So, I mean, psychologically, I think we're a lot more open-minded than some other people that I know. You know, because it's funny, just like the differences between my father and I. Now, he'll say that he doesn't believe in any of this stuff, yet he will actually tell a story in which he encountered a shadow person, and you know, as he's telling the story, I'm like, Dad, that's a ghost story. And he's like, no. So it's kind of interesting. I think the differences between, you know, the way people respond to this type of phenomenon. I mean, I've always been open-minded to it, but, I don't know if I've been psychologically damaged or anything like that.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, you don't seem like that. And most of the ghost hunters are, and I don't even like using that word. I prefer paranormal investigator than hunter, you know, because you know, that brings up connotations. And if we're going to be examining what we do, you know, the way I examine spirit communication, the way you examine the shadow people, these interdimensional beings, I think that we have to stick to the scientific method. We have to objectively observe it instead of jumping to conclusions. Do you find, though, that maybe like socially, when people find out what you do, some people steer clear of you? In other words, when I went public with being a medium, I lost most of my friends. But I made new friends, people that are interested in this line of work. Do you feel that that is a side effect of going public, certainly on television?
Yeah, it is. You know, there are some people that end up shying away from you. There's some ultra-religious people that, you know, and even a couple of family members that, you know, are just like, you know, you're messing with demons. You know, but I'll tell you, what's kind of interesting is I have an aunt on my mother's side who's a nun, and at one point she was actually the mother superior of her convent, but she's a bit more elderly now and had to relinquish that role. But I remember sitting, because she's a cloistered nun, so you get visitation a couple times a year, and it was a few years ago. It was the first time I'd been back to see her in several years and get the whole family kind of sitting in like a shoehorn or a horseshoe around her. And, you know, I'm kind of, you know, just saying hi to everybody, kind of, you know, keeping to myself on, you know, any of the ghost stuff. But one of my aunts says, hey, you know, Mike's into ghosts and hauntings and all that. And all of a sudden, here's my aunt who's a nun. That just, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to get the Bible thrown at me now. But no, she just brightens up. Oh, I love ghosts and hauntings. And so she wanted to know about everything. And so I was really taken aback. You know, it's surprising to me, you know, the people that shun you and shut you out and the others that are actually very accepting. They're a lot of times they're very opposite of who you think that might be.
That's true. I found, like, I've had many members of the clergy from several different faiths come to me for readings. And, you know, the official, you know, party line, if you will, of religion is that, you know, spirit communication, it's evil, mediums are not a god, yada, yada, yada. But the people that really do understand realize that the other dimension, the other side is not some far off, distant, nebulous, or evil place, and that spirits are able to communicate with us and they're around us constantly. So, Mike, how did you get into this? I know that you said your background's in computers. I mean, you're like the all-American guy. You're a father of four. You know, you love baseball. You live in Ohio. I mean, God, you can't get more American than you. So how did the all-American boy turn into Ghostbuster?
Yeah,
Ohio. Excuse me, paranormal investigator.
Yeah, and I played baseball for a little while. It was fun. Yeah, you know, it actually, again, kind of goes back to my childhood. You know, I'd had those different experiences. You know, I have been a writer ever since I was 7 years old, and I wrote little mystery stories, and sometimes I'd write little ghost stories. I even wrote historic fiction as a 7-year-old, if you can imagine that. We're talking like little stick figures, you know, talking about George Washington, but it happened. But really, kind of that moment that I knew. I was about 15 years old, and my friend David and I were visiting our friend Lori, and we're just, you know, sitting in her living room, just kind of shooting the breeze, talking about teen drama, all that stuff. But she lived in an older house in the historic section of our town that we lived in. And all of a sudden she says, I think my house is haunted. Well, instantly, David and I are very intrigued. Oh, really? You know, tell us more. So she's telling us about how there's a, you know, old family cemetery in the backyard. These different things are happening around the house. And her main concern was her bedroom, in which every time that she'd go into her room, she'd tack something up on the wall because, you know, teen girls are going to try to put up posters and everything. The stuff would fall down, like whether it was an hour, a day, a week later, whatever it was, it would always end up falling down. She could not keep anything on this wall. So she thought the wall was haunted. So, okay, we're going to go up and we're going to check it out. We're investigating. Had no idea it was, you know, technically a paranormal investigation. You know, this is, you know, long before the television shows came out, before the internet, all that. And so David and I go up there. We're, you know, we're checking out the room. She's showing us different things in the room and, you know, kind of getting some more of the story from her. And David, I didn't realize this about him at the time, but he was a very, very sensitive guy. And he put his hand flat to the wall like that. And as he did so, and he stood there, he turned this bright, bright red and started sweating profusely. And I'm looking at my friend like, oh my God, what the heck is going on with David? I'd never seen anything like this before. So he started going, like, you know, wall to wall in the house, trying to find like these other kind of quote unquote hot spots. And I'm looking at David, I'm looking at the wall. And that was the moment that just kind of clicked. Like, this is absolutely fascinating. And I knew right then that I was going to be involved with this for the rest of my life.
Wow. So that was your aha moment with that. So what do your kids think? Do they think like you're totally whacked or they got the coolest dad ever?
They're mixed. They're mixed. Some of them don't really believe in all this stuff. My daughter, when she was around 16 years old, 15, 16 years old, she went on several paranormal investigations with myself and the team that I was with at the time. So, you know, she's has some experience doing this, but, you know, she's kind of doing her own thing these days.
Super. And I know we got about another 15 minutes. So if anyone wants to call in and share their supernatural encounter, 1-800-930-2819. Mike, people can find out about you through MikeRicksecker.com, but also through HauntedMedia.com, right?
Yeah, Haunted Road Media.
HauntedRoadMedia.com, my bad. Yep.
And HauntedRoadMedia.com. We have the YouTube channel is Haunted Road Media as well. That has 700 videos out there, right? Over 700 videos. Edge of the Rabbit Hole has its own YouTube channel as well for that show, which we just had you on. And there's also the new site that I put out there about a month and a half ago, it's connecteduniverseportal.com. And this is a membership site, but also has courses that I'm in the process of developing and will be posting out there. So, you know, to get into shadow entities, interdimensional beings, other supernatural topics. And then the membership side has all kinds of like behind the scenes videos, monthly Q&A videos, all kinds of articles, the video version of the Beyond the Shadows live stream goes out there. So there's a lot of things that we're doing out on Connect the Universe portal.
So were these all in the works before COVID, or are these things that you came up during lockdown?
Kind of a mix. Some of them were before COVID, because Shadow Dimension has been in the works for about a year and a half. But some of the other things like Connect the Universe portal, I've been talking about the quote unquote connected universe for a long time, but yeah, kind of Nicole and I during lockdown were like, yeah, we should put that membership site together. Well, we talked about doing courses is kind of what it came down to. You know, how would I, you know, present courses? And that's where the idea for that site came out of.
So with these courses, is that going to be teaching people like theory or practical application? I mean, what will be the substance of the courses on the Connected Universe website?
It kind of depends on the topic. So for instance, like the shadow entities course, it is like a real nuts and bolts. We're getting into, you know, all the different theories, all the different types. You know, we get into, you know, the sleep paralysis aspect of it, all the different kind of variations like we were talking about with like interdimensional beings, and, you know, kind of really breaks down everything, even, you know, get into the question, are they evil? Are they demons? You know, things like that. And so, I did a workshop on this back in the fall called Unveiling the Shadows. So it's basically kind of taking that workshop and amplifying the heck out of it.
You've mentioned sleep paralysis a few times. Mm-hmm. And from a psychological standpoint, and once again, you know, I'm looking forward. I wish Dr. Pat were here, because she'd really be able to explain to us what that phenomena is. But my understanding is sleep paralysis, people feel like they simply can't move, like they're somehow immobilized against their own will. Now, can you explain to us how sleep paralysis ties into, or is there a connection between sleep paralysis and the shadow people?
Yeah, it's a question that commonly comes up, because a lot of people will see these entities when they wake up in the middle of the night. And kind of like when I was 8 years old, seeing the thing standing in the corner of the room or at the edge of the bed. Now, I didn't experience sleep paralysis during that moment. You know, my mouth opened, my arms moved, I could turn my head to watch it run down the hall. But I have experienced real sleep paralysis at other times, which was very scary the first time I ever experienced it. But it's a natural biological function in which basically when we go to sleep, the body paralyzes ourselves so that we don't act out our dreams while we're sleeping. But sometimes when you wake up, the body doesn't fully wake all the way and you're still paralyzed. Now, what has happened is a lot of people in the medical community, there's papers out there, National Institute of Health and what have you, that have stated that when you wake up and you see this shadow entity, it's a result of this combination of sleep paralysis and hallucination. They believe that you're just hallucinating this thing when you wake up, and, you know, that's due to the paralysis. Well, You know, I've kind of already stated a number of stories in which I was wide awake and seeing shadow entities, as well as many other people, of course. But one of the qualms that I have with this idea is that, you know, people are waking up, they're paralyzed, they see a shadow person. Why is it always a person if it's a hallucination out of our dream? You know, we have dreams of all kinds of different things. Could be, you know, a tree could be in your dream, could be airplanes, cars, motorcycles, what have you. But those don't show up in these people's bedroom. It's always this person. So I believe what's actually happening here is that you have two different phenomena happening at the same time. That, you know, sleep paralysis is a real biological phenomenon. Right. Shadow people are a real supernatural phenomenon. They're just happening at the same time. But what I think is happening here is that, and anybody who's had children will understand this, that child comes into the bedroom, you're sleeping, you know, they maybe need to use the bathroom, or need to drink of water, or whatever it is. And sometimes, and my kids are actually especially notorious for this, especially my youngest son, Cameron, sometimes they don't, you know, tap you on the shoulder or shake you awake. Sometimes they just stand there and they stare at you. And like I said, my son Cameron was notorious for this. And all of a sudden I would just like jar awake and he's standing right there. I'm like, oh my gosh, Cameron, what are you doing? What do you need? You know, I've had a bad dream, or I need water, or whatever it was. Okay, we'll go take care of that. Well, what was it that woke me up? Because he didn't touch me. And what it was is I felt his energy. I felt his presence. You know, we each have a toroidal energy around us that goes out, that expands out several feet. And so I felt his energy come into my energy field, and that's what woke me up. So what I think is happening here is we are feeling the energy of the shadow person standing there, and that wakes us up. And then we see the thing standing there get frightened. Some people, when that happens, when the energy wakes them up from the shadow person, they enter that, they're still in that sleep paralysis state. So it just happens to be happening at the same time that a shadow entity is in their room.
You know, I've heard also that for people that have an out-of-body experience, which can also be referred to as an astral projection, that sleep paralysis is when you're coming, your consciousness is re-entering your body and basically hasn't reconnected. And the reason that you're seeing shadow people is because when you're having an astral projection, you're going into that frequency where spirits are, you know, where spirits are, that you're seeing spirits. So I don't think that theory is too much different than what you're talking about, because you're having a supernatural and a natural experience at the same time. You know, because I've heard the naysayers, oh, yes, that's just sleep paralysis. It's like, no, there's a lot more to this than just, you know, the fact that your body is not physiologically responding.
That's a very good example, and that's a interesting concept with the astral projection and all that. And I think what happens is, you know, we try to cram everything into one specific idea or concept, and there are certainly, you know, exceptions, you know, to the rule. You know, every situation is a little bit different. You know, I've had real sleep paralysis in a different way, and I've talked to other sleep paralysis experiencers who never saw any shadow entities. My couple of experiences, I didn't see any shadows. It was actually the reverse, where my body shut down. I wasn't waking up at the time. I was actually awake, and then I was so exhausted, my body shut down, but my mind was still awake. So it was, you know, the opposite of the way a lot of other people experience it. So you can't just compartmentalize everything into one idea.
Right. It's like when you walk into a room and you get cold chills and tingles. Well, normally, cold chills and tingles are the physiological response to a frightening event, and it evokes the fight or flight response. And when encountering spiritual entities, because they're electromagnetic fields and their electromagnetic field interacts with ours, the physiological response is cold chills and tingles. So you're having two different forms of stimuli which result in the same physiological response. And that's my theory why so many people feel that spirit contact is scary, because it has the same physiological response. So what we're talking about here with sleep paralysis is different forms of stimuli, or we'll call them triggers, which trigger sleep paralysis. The different, you know, you may have the same physiological state, which would be sleep paralysis, but the triggers are different. So and so that's what we're talking about, everybody, is that the shadow people, spirit communication, interdimensional communication and contact cannot just be lumped into one category. And that's why people like Mike Ricksecker are so very important to this field, because it removes the fear, the paranoia, the superstition from otherworldly encounters. And by applying the scientific method, you can come up with a logical explanation, because Mike and I are on the same page. A mystery is only a question for which we do not yet have the answer. Mike, I really want to thank you for being on the show tonight. Tell everybody the name of your book, how they can get hold of you, and how they can order your book, A Walk in the Shadows.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again for having me on, Mark. It's always great talking to you. Yeah, you can find my book, A Walk in the Shadows, at MikeRicksecker.com. You can also find it out at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those great book-selling sites, Books A Million. And check out ShadowDimension.com. Watch the trailer for the upcoming docu-series, and also ConnectedUniversePortal.com.
Now, isn't there, I know that St. Patrick's Day is next week, but isn't there something about a trip to Ireland?
Ireland, yeah, that's actually coming up. We pushed it off till 2022 because Ireland is still basically in lockdown. And so... And a lot of people had concerns. So next year, July 1st through the 9th, 2022, we have a fantastic tour of Ireland coming up. We're exploring a number of great castles out there, a number of haunted locations, some of the stone circles, ancient mysteries of Ireland. You can find that out at mysteriousadventurestour.com. I also have links from my website to there as well.
Well, thank you, Mike, and everybody, thanks for tuning in to The Psychic and the Doc. I'll be back next week with the amazing Dr. Pat, Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, God bless, and remember, keep your eye on the shadows.
Hey, everybody, thank you for tuning in to The Psychic and the Doc with Mark Anthony and me, Dr. Pat Basile, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hey, look, come back next week so we can explore with you more of life's many challenges and learn from fascinating guests and, you know what, even Mark and me. We'll connect you and discover insights from people in this life and from the afterlife. Extraordinary problems, yeah, they do. They require extraordinary solutions. But step into the world of possibilities with us on The Psychic and the Doc. That's every Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That's TransformationTalkRadio.com. And don't forget, we're also live face-to-face on Facebook.com, Transformation Talk Radio.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.